Welcome to the School of Hollywood. I'm Steve Owens, your host. I'm a talent manager and a producer of movies, TV, and music, former agent, and have 43 gold and platinum records. I want to start a podcast about helping people in the business learn the inside track. Today, we're very fortunate to have Jeff Rohde, who has written screenplays for DreamWorks, Universal, Paramount Pictures, New Regency, TriStar. Plus, he's also written pilots for HBO, CBS, and Warner Brothers. Additionally, he was a producer on Sony Pictures' classic feature, Love, Lisa, starring Academy Award-winning actors Philip Seymour Hoffman and Kathy Bates. Today, we're going to be talking about his directorial debut on 18 to Party. So let's get started. Hi, it's Steve Owens with Jeff Rohde, a producer, a director, and a writer.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here.
So you were the writer and the director of the project 18 to Party. What made you get involved in this project in the sense of sitting down and writing the script on it and then wanting to direct it?
I think it was trying to converge a few objectives. I really wanted to write a film about Generation X. You know, I'm a proud member of Generation X, and it felt like the right thing to do for me. And I was able to sort of, you know, kind of backdoor that into some experiences I had as a kid, you know, and things that went on around me as a kid that I was probably too young to sort of really understand what was going on. But I grew up in a pretty small community. So, you know, all of middle school and kindergarten and high school were in the same building, you know, so a lot of stuff as like an 11-year-old kid you'd hear, you know, was going on in the high school. And so when you're 11 and there's a 19-year-old walking down the hall, or, you know, they might as well be 50, you know, so it really started with making sense of some of the things and tragedies, frankly, that went on in my community. An unusual amount of death, unusual amount of accidents and suicide. There's a suicide epidemic in the country at the time. And it was really trying to encapsulate everything that I could into this story. And I think that because, you know, you have a limited budget, you have a limited time, it felt like the higher concept idea would be the lowest concept idea, which was to have kids talking and waiting. And that's really where the idea sprang from. There's a lot of film sort of influences other filmmakers and other playwrights. And I just sort of sat down and just knocked it out. And through a lot of luck and old friends, we were able to get it together and make the film. So that's kind of the abridged version.
Well, when I was watching the movie, I really didn't read what the description was about it. I wanted to have the full surprise. And at first I thought it was kind of like a Twilight Zone because you had the UFOs you're talking about. And then you had this unique color tone to the film. Yeah. Was that planned in the post-production, or did you plan that from the beginning on it?
You know, it's funny. It's something that there's this wonderful cinematographer we had named Grace Jordana, and she came on board, and I just loved her stuff. You know, there wasn't one time where we talked about we talked about it. You know, it's like I knew what we were going to get, and I knew what she did, and the playing with the light. You know, the film's a little darker than some might expect, and in playing with the light, you know, it the whole movie takes place over the course of 4 hours, really 5 hours, and so, you know, trying to do that, we shot it was a 14-day shoot, I think, so we had a lot of matching to do and a lot of you know, trying to match certain moments of the day and daylight over the course of a week and a half was tricky. So it was really her artistry, you know, and my sort of recognizing that artistry. And it might sound shocking and weird, but we never even talked about it, you know.
Wow. It came out looking great. Did an excellent job on it.
She's an extraordinary talent. We're so lucky to have her.
When did you shoot the film?
We shot it 3 summers ago. And, you know, we didn't really start post-production for a lot of months after. I mean, you just mentioned that you're a producer and you know that there are a million and one things that can happen that can keep you from, you know, keep, you know, from immediately pushing your film down the road, you know. And so there was a wait for a couple of reasons, and then there was a wait for another reason, and then we got it together. And then, of course, COVID came in. You know, we're supposed to have a limited release of the film in early May or the end of April. And obviously, so did every other movie that was scheduled then. You know, we had to do things differently. And so it was another, you know, May is a long time ago now, you know, so, you know, you wait. So we're just grateful and lucky that we're able to finally get it out into the world, you know.
Well, one thing about the film is it could be one that could be shot in the COVID time because the limited locations and the actors all contain pretty much the same actors throughout the film. Mm-hmm. So, you know, bravo to you on this. What was the process that you went through on casting the kids for your movie?
We had a great casting director named Kate Geller and Jessica Kelly at Christie Street Casting in New York City. And, you know, we went into it. It was one of those things where I don't think a filmmaker ever really gets a chance in his life, or if he does, he's lucky, or if she does, she's lucky that you get to sort of do what you want to do, you know. And I wanted to have kids that were young. I didn't want to have 17-year-olds and 18-year-olds playing 13 and 14. You know, it'd make a radically different film. The challenge there is that they're harder to find. There's a reason why people cast older kids to play younger kids, is that they're able to work more, work longer. So it's very limited. And so the casting directors, you know, they brought in hundreds of kids, you know, certainly in the pre-screen phase. And they would send me, you know, just scores and scores and scores of like little clips. And then, you know, I'd go into the city and we'd call actors in. And again, we just found the right kids. I don't know another way to say that. They were just really special kids. It was the one area — this is my first time directing a movie, you know, and it was the one area that I was confident I could be strong in. You know, maybe I would be bad at everything else, but I was like, I think I'll be able to get the kids, you know, and the writing is a little stylized, you know, and so I didn't know if it could even work. I didn't, you know, I workshopped it once with humans that were in their early 20s, you know, and so they were coming at it from a different way. And so young kids, you know, with that amount of dialogue, I just didn't know how it would work, you know. And I think one actor came in that ended up in the movie, and she started reading the lines, and I immediately knew it could work just from listening to her. And then over the course of time, you know, it's callbacks and callbacks and finding the right chemistry. There was one actor that it took a long time to find one of the roles, and we ended up with what we had, this really great charismatic group of young actors who are they're all wonderful, all of them. Human, great, 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 wonderful people, and they could probably do anything they want, you know, in the future.
Did you have to do any like chemistry reads with the kids before you hired them?
We did one. You saw the film. There's I guess if there is a lead in the film, it's Tanner Flood, who plays Shell, and he has a friend named Brad who's older, and that was a really hard — it was a really, really hard. That was a challenging role to fill. And so we did do a couple chemistry readings with those two. But besides that, you know, everyone just kind of did their thing. And then we put the pieces together, did a bunch of different readings, and the rehearsal period, we had, you know, a couple weeks of rehearsal, and we sort of knew that it was either going to work in rehearsal or not. And, you know, we did the best we could. And then of course, you know, we had a very limited shoot. So when the camera started rolling, we were just kind of like, I have no idea how this is going to work. You know, it was just, you know, and thankfully, you know, as a producer, that's probably not the most comforting thing, but you know, that was our mantra along the way. I'd say, you know, this really might not work, you know, and, you know, I guess depending upon your opinion, you know, it does or doesn't, but we think it does.
What kind of cameras did you use to shoot the film on?
You know, I think it's Selexa, Alexa. I don't even know which model, to be honest with you. I know it was that camera, and I don't know which model, which shows you the sort of, the faith I just put into in Greece and the camera crew. You know, I never knew.
What was your total budget that you guys put together for the project on it?
It was low. I mean, it was low. I don't know if it was a low. It was under it was under, I would say, it was certainly under $500,000, you know, which is like, you know, it's funny in this day and age, that might even sound like a lot, you know. It's once you get into working with kids though, and you have labor laws and you have SAG and you have
these overtime.
You have all those things that you can't afford. And so it's like, we had the time to either get the, we didn't, there was no overtime in the entire film, you know, and you know, you do what you can with what you have. And we had even the background actors, we only had background actors for 2 days. So we had to do everything that involved actors that weren't our main actors in the first 2 days of shooting. So, you know, it took a lot, and we got lucky. We got lucky a lot.
What made you select the main background, which has lots of graffiti on it? Because that was really cool in the background on it.
Yeah, it was cool. Well, that was done, you know, it's, again, when I said we got lucky a lot, we found that location probably 2 days before we start shooting. And it was really hard to find. We ended up shooting in Staten Island, New York, and that, all the graffiti, all the artwork on those walls was done by our production crew, and specifically Sam Bader, our production designer. We kind of sketched out what we wanted to have. There was a few things that I definitely wanted to build around with a certain kind of graffiti, but we didn't want the graffiti to be that good, you know, just something that kind of could fit in with that time and that place, you know? It looks really cool. It looks really cool. And people ask if it was already there. And so that's actually it's a really cool question, because it was not. And the actual location itself, you know, we didn't even think that we'd be able to have something with such, dimension and such. Yeah, there was just a lot of physical levels that we could use. There was a lot of depth. There was just a lot of things that wasn't necessarily going to be like, you know, nine kids leaning against a wall, you know. So again, really lucky. It was an abandoned building, and they had a for sale sign on it, and we just were able to make that work, you know. And they let us paint and do whatever we wanted, and then they sold the building right after we finished. So it worked out. It worked out perfectly for us.
Well, now they can say they have a movie set in their backyard.
They do. It's funny. The people that bought it, they we were just like, oh, can you keep some of that graffiti? And they did. It was a religious organization, and they were really kind and funny about it. But they're like, yeah, we can't keep this up. So, you know, it's a memory now.
I was reading on IMDb Pro that you were involved in a rewrite on Pitch Perfect.
Yes.
What exactly goes into doing a rewrite? You get the script. Do you come up with your own ideas, or what exactly does somebody in the rewrite job do?
I mean, you're really kind of just, you know, you're just following instructions in a way, you know, and that was something that was, it was so long ago. And I was really lucky. I think the writer of the film, Kay Cannon, this wonderful writer, she was working on 30 Rock at the time in their run up to pre-production. And the director, Jason Moore, also a wonderfully talented guy. He just wanted some help with, some scene structure and punching up certain things and this, that, the other. So I spent a couple weeks in Brooklyn and then a couple weeks down in New Orleans and just kind of did the best I could. And that was it. I mean, I knew going in when I read the script, I mean, they could have shot the script that I was given and it would have been as much of a hit, you know. I just knew that it was going to be really, really successful, before anyone even, started really moving on it. It was just really clear, you know.
Well, you had the opportunity to work with one of my favorite actors who's passed away, Philip Seymour, and two other great character actors, Kathy Bates and J.D. Walsh. What did you learn from these iconic character actors while making the movie?
J.D. and Kathy, I can't speak much for, but Philip was someone that I've known a very, very long time, you know. To that point of when we made the film and many, many years after, it's the artistry that he's was able to, you know, match time and time again, the level of artistry. I think it's such a good question. You know, I think about it a lot. I think that, there's a certain standard that he had. There weren't small roles in his mind, you know, there weren't small anything, you know, and there was no, you know, half measures and preparation. There was no, it's just not who he was, you know, and, you know, it's funny. One of the producers of the film is a woman named Emily Ziff Griffin, and Emily was a production partner with Phil for many, many years, and that's how we knew each other. So it was really lovely to be able to like have Phil's kind of spirit there with us. And we used to have this thing, like it was kind of like a "What would Phil do?" you know. And there are so many times when, you know, the one thing I got from Phil was like, if you think you might not have it, then you don't, you know? And so every time we would do a scene and it would be like, okay, was that right? Did we get that? You know, did we get every inch out of that? It's like, if you kind of have to ask the question, and this is from him, if you have to ask the question, then you didn't, you know, and you keep going until you have that feeling. And it was just something that we were able to carry with us. And I do that now all the time, whether I'm writing something and whatever I'm doing, you know, if it's like, the mantra for me is like, if it doesn't seem like it's working, then it's not, you know? And that's what I took from him, that level of, you know, workmanship and perfectionism, you know?
That's amazing. And it's great things to, you know, just thinking in my head is what you're saying here is like, okay, I can see how to put that in play in several different things that I'm involved in. Is there anything you could pass on to actors from what you've learned in the last project, 18 to Party, that they could work on their skills as young kids?
I think working, if you could work with other kids on plays, you know, whether you can, you know, grab a copy of Suburbia or grab a copy of, you know, I'm sure there's a script to even Linkletter films and stuff like that. I think just like working together on things and also recognizing that it's sort of like, you know, calling back the Phil thing a little bit, there aren't small roles, you know, and this might be the sort of inverse of advice to an actor, but I did a workshop of this project of 18 to Party as a play first in Williamstown, Massachusetts. And this really wonderful actress named Julie White, she directed the workshop. And, you know, we were just having fun. And I was like rewriting things and seeing what worked and what didn't. And she gave me this, you know, and it's hard to write for an ensemble. It's hard to write anything. But, you know, in the film you saw, there's 9 kids, you know.
Yep.
And you're trying to do your best, you know, with each one. And she said, you know, the thing for a writer to understand is that the goal should be when you're writing for an ensemble is that every actor should go home at night thinking that they have the most important role in the movie or the play. And it was like a powerful thing to hear, obviously, that you're going to come up short. I mean, there's a character in the movie that probably has 5-6 lines, you know. But if you sort of strive for that kind of perfection in a way, knowing that you're not going to reach it, you know, but just keeping that in mind, you know, I would, you know, by the time we shot, I was like, you know, for most of these actors, I could see them saying that they had like the coolest role or the most important role. And I was really proud about that. So I think that's really what the lesson is in a way for young actors is that there aren't really small roles, you know, there was not a small role in 18 to Party, certainly not as I saw it, and certainly not in a way that any of the actors saw it. So,
Jeff, I really appreciate you being on the show today, and best of luck in 18 to Party and future endeavors.
Thanks. Grateful to be on. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The School of Hollywood. Please follow us on Instagram at School of Hollywood and subscribe so you can hear our next episode. I'm Steve Owens. Until next time, continue to follow your dreams and look to the stars for your success.